This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. We're here, and it's right after New Year's. It's a cold day. It's a great day to either be sledding or stay inside. It is chilly and icy. How are you, Carol?
Oh, I'm fighting the overcast skies. There's a certain beauty to it, but I'm longing for a nice bright sun.
Well, we got it right here. We got the sun and we've got the cold. I remember I lived in Idaho for a while, and some nights I'd wake up thinking that the sun was shining on me, but what it really was a full moon on the snow. Beautiful. I'd have to get up and sit there staring out and looking at that beautiful iridescent landscape. It was like something we would make up. Well, today it isn't quite that good, but it's pretty nice today, but icy, so be careful where you step. Since so much of what we talk about is what we experience and how we experience it, I wanted to begin by talking about what I've seen in my office lately. And I've just got a small practice, and in the last week and a half, I've had 9 patients call me stating that they've been tested positive for COVID and asking me protocols. And consequently, I've been very successful with my patients. We've been able, through working with them by the phone, just the phone, I've been able to turn them around and pull them out of that COVID syndrome. And rather rapidly, surprisingly rapidly, my dear friend, doctor with a very large practice, told me he had 98 calls in the last 2 weeks with positive COVID. And he is also working with them by phone with a holistic protocol. Now, within the two practices, we've had no deaths. We've had people a little uncomfortable, people that respond faster or slower than others, but we've had and we've seen nothing but response and positive response. Sometimes, like I said,
nobody going to the hospital.
Not between our two practices.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that. We're quite pleased. And I just got an email or a text from someone who said, I'm having too many people sick, seriously sick around me and damaged from this disease. Could you please give me a protocol? So, Carol, right now, this is what I do in my office. This is not what I recommend for everyone, but this is what I work with my patients. So I'd like you to hear what I do, and I'd like Carol to add to it, supplement it, and make it even stronger. And here we begin. So get a paper and pencil. And what the backbone is of my protocol is prevention. And how do I do that? I do that with vitamin C, regular vitamin C. I give that to my family, my son, myself, and we take vitamin C every day. Now, my son is younger, but he's gotten big. So he's on about 2,000 to 4,000 a day, just average. Okay, he takes 2 in the morning, and if I can catch him in the afternoon, he takes 2 1,000 in the afternoon. So we've got 2,000 to 4,000. I'm 2,000 to 4,000, sometimes 6,000. depending if I feel like I'm exhausted. If I'm exhausted, I take more. If I feel like I've possibly had an exposure, I take more. Then I take vitamin D. And my D has some K in it, enough to create the balance. And it's a minimum on a daily basis of 5 to 10,000. My son takes 5,000. He is 105 pounds, 5'6". So he takes 5,000 daily. My husband takes 10,000. So that's our dose. I also take, and we also take zinc. And that's what we're going to be speaking about today, zinc. Why take zinc? But we take zinc daily, and that's about 15, 20, 25 milligrams daily, okay? And we take magnesium, and we take that every day. We also take quercetin, and it comes in a 250 or a 500. We take 500 a day, so we've got a little handful of pills right in front of us. And sometimes we take vitamin A, and we've got a 10,000 palmate, and we take a couple of those a week, and they're teeny little pills. And we also included some selenium. So that's our prevention program. So that's the most powerful thing we can do, is create prevention. Then we eat well. We really try, even over the holidays, to lower our sugar levels, because we know that sugar increases zinc excretion, that sugar sedates our macrophage or our immune cells. We know that. So that's the base protocol, prevention. But then, and there's one other little piece of that prevention, but this also goes into treatment, is we use the nebulizer. The nebulizer is so very powerful. I also have an ozone machine, so if my family comes into the city, I do ozone treatments. I do ear ozone. I do IV ozone, whatever I feel or have time for to give my family while
What do you put as a nebulizer?
The nebulizer, I have a very standard solution. I use normal saline, and sometimes and it doesn't have to be sterile, so you could just buy it over the counter in the pharmacy, or you can take some warm water and take a couple of pinches of salt. You got normal saline right there. Pinches. Yep. You don't want it to taste real salty. Just a slight pinch. Warm water. Then mix it around. Now you got normal saline. So what I use is hydrogen peroxide food grade and Lugol's solution, which is a pharmaceutical grade iodine, and I get it in the 2.5%, and the hydrogen peroxide, I get it in the 3%, okay? And then I get about 5 or 6 cc's, or 7 cc's. I get about 2 tablespoons of the normal saline, and I put it in the reservoir of the nebulizer, and then I put 2 or 3 drops of the hydrogen peroxide, and I put 2 drops of the iodine. And then I turn the nebulizer on, and that's a cool steam, and we breathe it in. Because where do viruses enter? They enter into the mouth, they enter in through the sinus, all that oral passage, oral nasal passage. And it sits there until we're weak enough and it can then move in and attack us. So if we've been out, lots of people, we come home, we do a nebulizer, then we go to bed. We also, so that's a prevention. But if we get ill, we use that, the nebulizer. We fill it up, we use it, it takes about 20 minutes, we let it rest for an hour or so, and then we do it again. and we do it right. all day long until we're well. And it takes about a day and a half, and we knock things out. I add one more piece to my protocol. If possible, I love people to take hot baths before they go to sleep because some people have fevers, and I found this really helpful to break the fever. I get...
Anything in the bath?
Yes, yes, hot bath, and then I get over-the-counter just regular hydrogen peroxide. So I get as hot as the person can handle. I put hydrogen peroxide in the water, a bottle, and then I put a cup of Epsom salt, mix it around, and sit there, and people start sweating. It's pretty warm. And then when they really don't, either the water gets cool or they're tired of sitting there, they get out. I have them put a robe on or dry off, but not wash off. And then go climb into bed and go to sleep. And the next day, with regularity, it's not 100%, but with regularity, they call me. They tell me that that night their fever broke. I said, did you do your nebulizer this morning yet? Oh, no, I forgot. No, no, start it up. And we're able to break this. You know, it's not the same kind of boogeyman that we're hearing. I got a call from a woman, and she asked me for a certain supplement. I said, come on down. You're just not that many blocks from my office. You know, you could just... come on down. She, oh, no, I don't leave my house. She hasn't left her house in 17 months. And she's not an ill person. She's just terrified of the virus. And I'm seeing that more and more. People just terrified. I talked to a lady yesterday who just got my number, never heard of me before. She's going to the doctor's. She got a little cold flu. She's been tested every day for COVID. It's come back negative for the last 5 days. She's going to the doctors every single day, and now she wants an antibiotic.
Well, that won't help her.
So explain why not, Carol. Can you explain that to us?
unless she's genuinely sick and has like a bacterial overgrowth started, maybe secondary to something else. Often, as your immune system goes down, you can get a bacterial pneumonia, and then it might be appropriate. I was just reading Vernon Coleman. He's a physician in England, and he's an old guy, and he wrote a book about 100 things he's learned. And one of the things he really goes on about is antibiotic use. And he said what's really interesting is, he said, doctors don't really understand antibiotics anyway. He said they just choose the flavor of the day. There's maybe 1,000 to choose from. And what they've learned to use, they use and nothing else, whether it's appropriate or not. They started before culture. They don't even know what they're trying to treat, so it's a real problem. And then he said we fill our animal food source full of antibiotics, and so we have an antibiotic mess. So better that we would support our immune system to go after whatever it is that is growing out of proportion. That's what our bodies were designed to do. One of the things I like about all the things he said is those things all have a role. We've gone through shows with going through the basics. They all have a role to play in boosting our immunity. And that's what's going to save us. It's not a miracle drug someplace.
Or living in a bubble. Procedure.
Living in a bubble will not save you. Your immune system will not get the challenges it needs to have to be a healthy, functioning human being. And in fact, it really bothers me. We talked about, you know, the sun and how much we need the sun. So how are you going to get sunshine when you're isolating yourself in your home and in New York in the winter? So there's just no vitamin D happening there. And if you're not taking care of yourself, that's a really devastating scenario. You're going to be prone to any kind of illness.
Well, I love getting a big, heavy coat on and a hat and gloves and boots, knee boots, thick boots, and I walk along the beach as much as I can in the winter. And it's chilly.
Yeah.
It is chilly, and the wind is blowing, and the dogs running back and forth and barking. And we walk along the beach for at least a mile, and we do it as often as we can. And fortunately, we're talking to many people who live close to the coast. All of New York City is right along the coast. It's an island. There's walking areas all around the city near the water. Viruses cannot pass when you're out in the wind like that. So you could go for a walk with a friend and walk along the water. So good for you. So psychologically and physically stimulating. Such a wonderful thing to do. Cold. So you come back in and you make yourself a nice hot lemon tea. Absolutely delicious. And you're ready for your day. Don't forget your outside time. Just because it's cold, it doesn't mean you can't go out. And just because there's a virus, it doesn't mean you can't be outside. You can. Actually, that's the best place for you to be, is outside. So please, folks, we're going to put this protocol up on our Facebook page. But folks, and there will be a few little comments that might be additional, but please, folks, the worst thing that we can do is be afraid. Afraid doesn't move us forward. It's not necessary. Cautious? Heck yes, I'm cautious. I make sure my family has their vitamins and their nutrients. I make sure that we keep our sugars down and we eat foods. I'm really, really focusing right now on all the different colors. So I brought beets into the household. And I hate beets. So now I'm figuring ways to cook with beets that they like. And we're enjoying our beets. But I'm constantly adding and broadening. And that's what our bodies need. So, folks, we don't want to be fools. We want to be appropriate. We want to understand that there is a potential problem, but fear doesn't in any way, shape, or form move us forward. Action does. And that's what we're about. We're about appropriate action.
Corinne, since you brought up quercetin, I'd like to bring up the notion of zinc ionophores. And we're going to be delving into zinc a little bit deeper, but zinc is so important to our whole immune system. It is a cofactor in so many reactions. We can't leave this behind. And you mentioned quercetin, which is a zinc ionophore. And what that means is that molecule of quercetin shuttles zinc inside the cell where it can do its activity. And it's really curious. I started looking into this. Another great zinc ionophore is green tea. Polyphenols of all sorts are zinc ionophores. We had a lot of discussion about ivermectin. It's a zinc ionophore. Hydroxychloroquine, a zinc ionophore. Azithromycin, there's a Dr. Zelenko who has been very successful with his therapies, and he likes to use azithromycin. It's also a zinc ionophore. I read a paper not too long ago. They were saying an old drug used for gout, colchicine, was helpful for COVID. And I look it up, and guess what? It also helps zinc get inside the cell. So we go, oh, I see a pattern here.
So guess what? I think we're going to have to talk about zinc for the rest of the program today. How's that sound, Carol?
Right. It seems to be like the cornerstone of what's going on here. And one of the things that became apparent, and you hear many people talking about, and sometimes the persistent problem, they get sick, and we used to experience this with a cold or flu too. This is not entirely unique, but it's coming up quite often. You lose your sense of taste and your sense of smell.
Oh, it's coming up quite often with this virus.
Right, right. What is that a red flag for? That's a red flag for zinc deficiency. In fact, there used to be a zinc taste test. It was a solution of zinc sulfate, and you'd have a little sample of it, and if it tasted like nothing, just plain water, you needed more zinc. If it became bitter, it means you had plenty of zinc aboard. Now, you were talking the other day about another version of this taste testing. What was it you were mentioning?
Oh, lozenges.
Right.
Lozenges are another form of taste testing. It's interesting because I just looked up on the NIH, and they talk about the fact that zinc deficiency is rare. They also wait. Oh my goodness, you're interrupting me. That zinc deficiency is rare. And then they go about to say that zinc testing is very inadequate because zinc doesn't stay in the blood or the serum. What it does is it moves into all cells. It moves into the DNA and allows the DNA to replicate appropriately the RNA. It moves into the neurons and allows the body to be more sensitive to dopamine. It moves into the muscle and allows the muscle to take up the protein. It moves into the brain and allows us to feel sleepy. It just goes on and on. It actually is... It's a cofactor for 300 known cofactors to allow our body to function better. So with that said, the NIH said that deficiency is rare, but then they go on to state older people are deficient. Vegetarians eat foods with zinc, but the foods that they eat with adequate zinc are high in phthalates, and the end result is they can't absorb the zinc that they're eating. Young people are deficient in zinc. The produce that we're producing now has become deficient in zinc because we're spraying so heavily, and the spray that we use, the glyphosate, is a zinc chelator. So it binds with the zinc and doesn't allow the food source to absorb the zinc out of the soil. People who have had bypass surgeries are deficient in zinc. People who take antacids are deficient in zinc. As we age, we become deficient. So, and then at the end they say, but deficiency is rare.
Well, not so rare. Actually,
not so rare.
One of the signs in children is the failure to thrive. And worldwide, 450,000 children don't make it because of low zinc, depending on what combination of factors are in there. We need, in our muscles, we need 1.4 to 2.5 grams of zinc in our muscles, which is a lot. Often we're talking about micrograms for minerals like selenium or milligrams for magnesium, for instance, but now we're talking about a very, very large amount. It's the second most common trace mineral that we absolutely have to have
in our bodies. But there's another piece that we're also seeing in the society is an epidemic of infertility. And with that said, we need zinc for fertility. We need zinc to produce and maintain testosterone. With low zinc, testosterone converts to estrogen rapidly. With low zinc, testosterone converts also to DHT, which is an inflammatory form of testosterone. And so what zinc does is it slows that conversion down. Some of the conversion is normal and natural and appropriate, but when it's moving too fast, what happens? It then reduces the body of zinc, which is necessary for gonadal formation and for creating testosterone and for sperm activity. So that zinc is essential. Go, Karen.
When there is a zinc deficiency, and this came from work done by Eugene Shippen many years ago, low zinc leads to more aromatization. That's aromatase is the enzyme involved. And that creates more estrogen out of your testosterone. So you see older men, as their testosterone is going down, they actually become more estrogenic. They start growing breasts and they start storing more body fat. And when you get to be an older man, sometimes they have as much as or more than an older woman have more estrogen. That happens during a zinc deficiency. So the drugs that deplete zinc can be a problem, like drugs that are diuretics, and some of the heart drugs actually create a deficiency in zinc. So here's another group of people who need to pay attention to their zinc supplementation.
So I was speaking in the beginning of the program that I try and attempt to keep sugars down to maintain elevated immune status going into this, literally, this viral season. And this is the viral season. We're in closed rooms. We dry them up, the rooms, low humidity. So there's a higher incidence of passing viruses from person to person. With that said, we know that high sugars chelate or make the body release or excrete more zinc through the urine. So by lowering sugars, you're doing multiple things. And one of them is you're protecting your zinc status in your body. It also, zinc has a very important role to play in the attachment of insulin and allowing the body to utilize insulin. So low zinc status is an important piece in insulin resistance, and maintaining adequate zinc status can be very beneficial with people who are struggling with blood sugar problems. Carol?
I wanted, before we got too far away from the sexual issues, I think...
Oh, I hate to get away from sexual issues.
I think it was that our great lover, Casanova. You remember hearing about him?
Oh, yes. Movies.
Yeah, he was said to have 50 oysters every single day. And oysters are particularly rich in zinc. And this is why we have this kind of urban legend kind of thing that oysters are great for your sexual functioning. Perhaps it is. You might have to have more than a dozen to do so. I don't know what the dose per oyster is.
It's the highest source of zinc in the known food world at this point, and it's in the 70 milligrams.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it's serious.
Maybe a dozen is enough.
It's a serious amount of zinc. This guy was taking in a lot of zinc. But, you know, the big joke in the Slavic countries in Russia is they always have bowls of pumpkin seeds around to keep their males fertile and vigorous. And sunflower seeds are also a very good source of zinc. Not quite as good as pumpkin seeds, but absolutely excellent. There's lots of zinc in meats like chicken and red meat. And when you look at the amount of zinc in grains and in vegetables, it's quite adequate. But if you're going to look at grains and vegetables and beans as your source of zinc, you should soak them the night before, because that breaks up the thiolates that block the absorption of zinc. So soaking them would be an important piece, because what they're finding is vegetarians, strict vegetarians, are low in zinc.
You brought up an issue before about protein. And one of the things we know now is that all the proteins in our body, they're flexible and have to have a certain shape to fit into receptor sites appropriately. And zinc has been shown to bind to over 3,000 proteins, and they call it creating a zinc finger. This kind of sticks on the protein structure and makes sure that these proteins are folded in the appropriate configuration. We've heard about a disease called prion disease. This is or mad cow disease, sometimes called that. This is a disease of malfolded proteins. They're not folded in the right place to produce the activity that you want. Once you have this structure, zinc fingers bind to estrogen and thyroid and vitamin A and vitamin D and metallothionines, which are part of our immune system. So it's such an important part to our hormone system as well. We talked about making too much estrogen from testosterone, but there's another function with all these proteins to add the hormones to that protein structure for getting results. It's probably equivalent to being a receptor for these various things.
Carol, we always use zinc or discuss zinc when we're talking about skin problems, and maybe you could elaborate on that.
There are so many uses for zinc on the skin, and it helps with rashes and itching and post-sunburn to help your skin recover. That pink stuff that you see in the pharmacies, calamine lotion, is actually zinc-based.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Such an old formula. I made it from scratch, so to speak, in my compounding lab way back when. So that's an important thing. You have zinc oxide paste, which protects you from sunburn. There are other zinc-based things you can find in the first aid section, and it's just wonderful for healing any kind of skin irritation or rash, and your skin really thrives with extra zinc. I wanted to also bring up another kind of red flag with zinc shortages is white spots underneath your fingernails have been associated with low zinc. And so if this is something you're observing, you could supplement with zinc, and you'd find that with time those white spots disappear.
I'm looking at my fingers right now as you're speaking, as we all should be. And then we add zinc to our protocol in terms of like a zinc tally, where we suck on a zinc lozenge And we do that continuously until it doesn't taste good any longer. And over time, those white spots will disappear. But you know what? I'm remembering when I was a young mother and the child would have a diaper rash. Mm-hmm. And what would I use? An AD zinc ointment on their bottom. And they'd be all red and irritated. And you'd put this on. And the next time you'd change the diaper, everything would be very calmed down. And zinc was an essential piece of that in terms of healing the tissue and the skin. On the NIH page, speaking about zinc, that they said there are very, very few deficiencies, which we disagree with, that severe zinc deficiency and even mild to moderate zinc deficiencies can impair macrophage and neutrophil functions, which are our white blood cells, and natural killer cell activity and complement activity. The body requires zinc to develop and activate our T lymphocytes, our immune cells. Individuals with low zinc levels have been shown to have reduced lymphocyte growth and proliferation response to mitogens and other adverse alterations in immunity, and this can be corrected with zinc supplementation. So what we're talking about right there is that not only do the white blood cells not work as appropriately, but we also don't have as many when our zinc status is low. And then when we supplement with zinc, all of this can come back. This is a very direct cause and effect relationship to low zinc. Now, what we're dealing with, and this is what I see, we're dealing with a virus, but we're dealing with a weak immune system that allows this virus to go crazy throughout the society. So let's look at this, folks, and let's look at this in our families. Maintaining adequate nutrient status within our bodies. And zinc is just one piece of it. You know, we've been going through back to basics, the power of back to basics. And zinc is one important piece that allows us to move through this very dirty or bacterial and viral laden earth with a very large degree of immunity to it. So what we have to do is start looking inward to strengthen ourselves so we can function, not hide. How healthy do you think someone living in a bubble is, the bubble boy? They're not healthy. They can't be healthy. They have no exposure. They have no ability to create a response to an attack, a viral, bacterial, fungal attack. And guess what? That's what this earth is filled with, and it's supposed to be.
It allows us to have challenges to our immune system and continually help us build up our immune system to have us ready for anything. Just like you train as an athlete, for example, we train so you're ready for competition. So we have to train our bodies to be ready for anything, any onslaught of challenges. If we don't, if we do the equivalent of being a sloth and sitting in our chairs, we have not developed the capability for our bodies to handle this. I was just looking at some other things and seeing deficiency that might get diagnosed as something else. Fine tremor, unintentional tremor, impaired cognitive function, poor night vision, excessive hair loss. Some of these things we don't necessarily associate with zinc, but it would be something to look into and see if some of the other symptoms of low zinc that we've talked about are apparent too. And well, again, the zinc taste test.
And they're talking about zinc as a sleep modulator, that without zinc, our circadian rhythm does not work appropriately, and we don't fall asleep as well or maintain sleep. We forget that zinc is the second most abundant mineral in our brain. And that's not an accident. Our brain needs it to be able to function and create its balances. And how does zinc help us in an immune system other than just supporting our own body natural defenses through the white blood cell action? That zinc directly blocks and starves bacteria and viruses. It blocks their ability to get the nutrient that they need to be aggressive in the body. Zinc can't be underestimated. It's very, very powerful. And it's a very integral part of our ability to maintain our health. It's essential also for wound healing. Without adequate zinc, our body doesn't maintain the integrity of our tissue in our skin. And then if we get an injury, a cut, or we don't heal well, we don't heal rapidly or adequately, and we create more scar tissue. People who scar every time, I see people, I got a scar with a teeny little cut here, now I get a big scar. Those people can be very low in zinc, and we don't think of it that way. Now, the RDA of zinc is 14 milligrams a day for males, and 11 milligrams for adult females. What do you think of that, Carol?
There's much more needed than the minimum daily requirement. We've often made comparisons to that because it doesn't equivalent to optimal human functioning. So earlier in the show, Corinne, you mentioned doses like 15 milligrams, 20 milligrams, 25 milligrams. You can find this in your health food store under various forms, zinc sulfate, zinc orotate, zinc picolinate. Some are possibly better absorbed than others, but they all functionally get the zinc into your body. And again, zinc lozenges. But if you're really trying to boost your immune system, you may want like 25 to 50 milligrams a day if you're having immune system challenges. I've seen much higher doses being used for burn victims, but that's a special case when people are hospitalized. So there's a wide variety on zinc dosing, but in general, I would stick to maybe a 10, 15 milligram maintenance and boost up if you're challenged. What do you think?
I agree. We have to remember that too much zinc can be immune suppressing. So when people are ill, I recommend 50, maximum 75 milligrams of zinc. Generally, I recommend 50. But I've heard of people taking 150 or more. I don't feel that that's appropriate or necessary to get the response that we want out of our bodies in terms of our immune protection. So zinc is one of those, like selenium, where more is less. You want the appropriate amount within range, and your immune system will be very well supported. But Carol, I think what else? I think we want to switch it because you know what people are very deficient in days like this?
What are you leading to now?
Motion.
Oh, yes.
Motion. They're deficient. And when you say the word, I purposely said motion rather than exercise. Because what happens when you say the word exercise, people think, pushing, struggling, too much work. And you know what? That's one type, but that's extreme. And that is sometimes and quite often counterproductive for our health, but it is also not necessary to be able to be healthy and strong. Years ago, I read this book out of Tufts University, and I really don't remember the author. I remember the title, and it said, Strong Women Stay Young. And it was a physiologist, an exercise physiologist, working with patients. She started working with 50-year-olds with weights, very low weights. And then someone's mother saw it, and she was in her 90s and started using weights. And fortunately, the author was in Tufts, so they were able to do the research and do the calculation. And at every single age group that they worked with, and they were working specifically with women, when the women began to exercise and utilize, I mean, we're not talking about major weights. We're talking about 2 pounds, building up to 4 or 5 pounds. And some people went higher than that, but not large, large amounts. We saw significant differences in their mental acuity, in their vitality, in their strength, in their balance. They didn't fall as much when they were stronger. And we can make the assumption, maybe this is a big assumption, but we can make the assumption that the motion that they were creating and the building of the muscle that they were creating allowed everything, right down to digestion and bowel, to work better, and they felt better. And they were also, you know what? They were so proud of themselves. Oh, I can do this. They were so proud of themselves. I heard them interviewed. It was lovely. So what we do not want to forget, it's cold. Although it's beautiful and sunny here, it's not so beautiful and sunny where Carol is. And those are days we say, well, maybe I'll just stay under the covers and read a book. But I'll tell you something, the ability to stimulate your entire body and make it function more effectively has a lot to do with motion. And we want to add that into our relationship of maintaining our health. Now, today there's no wind. So you know what we're doing? We put up our badminton set, and we're going to be playing, running around on the snow, on the ice, playing badminton as a family.
How fun.
Yes.
We had a conversation earlier this week, and I'm trying to remember what exactly you said. You saw something that said, sitting is the new...
Oh, what was it?
Was it cigarette smoking?
Yes, yes, yes. Sitting
was
is
that it?
Yeah, is new. Cigarette, they're not calculating the amount of exercise you do. They're calculating the number of hours you're sitting.
Uh-huh.
So we're right down to taking walks, right down to getting up and down in our houses and walking back and forth. But getting up off the couch can change our health, our vitality, our focus. It's essential to be a complete program, a health program. Carol?
That's interesting. So essentially we're calling sitting a new risk factor as compared to smoking a cigarette or maybe eating too much sugar. It's getting listed in those things that if you want to really change your picture of health, you need to make adjustments do away with some of these behaviors. And sitting around is a behavior, and that's easy to modify. Maybe you're not up and playing badminton out in the yard today, but as we were talking about before, just bundle up warmly and go outside and enjoy the winter weather and be assured that this is good for you. Some of the people have put together training programs that challenge you with cold and hot water, changing the temperature when you're showering even. But going outside and spending some time in the cold weather is really a boon for you to make yourself stronger.
Exactly. One time I went in, I used to see this chubby little man in the diner in the morning when I got my coffee. Well, the diner closed for a while. The person changed ownership. It closed for about a good 8 or 9 months. And then one day I walk into, the diner, and there is, I couldn't recognize him. He said, "Hi." And I look at him, and this was the chubby little man. He was slim and more vibrant. I said, "My goodness, look at you. You look wonderful. You look so strong and wonderful." And I said, "What did you do? How did you do it?" He said, "I turned off my heater." I said, "What?" He said, "I turned off the heater in my house. I read something that when you're colder, your body utilizes more energy. And so I turned off my heater in my house, and I lost, I don't even remember how much weight, 35, 40 pounds in a year." He said, "I haven't changed my diet, although I do eat less because I'm not as hungry." But he said, "Without changing my diet, just turning off my heater, my body was able to shed the weight." Interesting, isn't it? So what we're talking about is another form of just straight physical motion or physical response to our environment that literally stimulates our energy and stimulates our health. When we're seeing someone that's too tired to get off the couch, when we're seeing someone who just, and they say, "Oh, I don't sleep well," so they're sitting around, you're looking at a syndrome. You're looking at, on some level, they don't have enough energy to sleep, so they don't go into enough sleep. And throughout the day, they don't have enough energy to function through their day. So you have this complete circle. And when you see that, you're seeing people that are not at their optimal health. That people who are at their optimal health have energy. They have the ability to get up and go. They have the ability to sleep. And they have the ability to participate in life. They don't have to be a marathon runner, but they have to be able to participate and create the motion necessary for their ability to survive in this life.
That's so true. My trainer just sent me a text, and he said, "It was unbelievable. My mother, my 80-some-year-old mother, is able to lift herself on the chinning bar."
Oh, my gosh.
"Hold it for a minute." And I said, "Well, that's pretty freaky."
I'm not able to.
He ended up being a trainer, so he comes from good genetic stock, maybe. But what I really liked about it is she could do it, and she would do it. Something people could think about. It doesn't mean that as you're aging, you have to sort of rearrange your life and do less and less and less. If you made movement and exercise part of your life, And even if you're a late starter, maybe you're 80 years old and you start taking yoga classes, you can do it. You can make significant changes to your body, to yourself, to your attitudes. And why not? I've seen on Facebook, I've seen 90-year-old gymnasts who could outperform anything I can do. So why not? If you have the idea and the ability to put some time and effort into this, you can do quite a lot with your body and make a lot of improvements.
So with that said, Carol, I would like to thank everybody for sharing this time with us. This would be a good time to create a New Year's resolution to enhance our health, to broaden our lives, to broaden our focus, and to share that with our friends, our family, our loved ones. And just because we didn't make this resolution as we were sipping champagne at midnight doesn't mean we can't create a resolution that focuses into a better life. So, Carol, every time we're together, I learn, and I want to thank you so much, and I want to thank the audience, and we'll be back next week. Carol?
Thank you, and do follow us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol. So see you there. We welcome your comments, and if there's anything you'd particularly like us to cover, please let us know.
We'll speak to you next week. Bye-bye. Have a great week. Enjoy walking in the cold. Bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.